Have you made an honest review? Jump onto fifthwrist.com and read real takes by real owners about their watches. And of course, get involved and write about what's on your wrist. Fifthwrist.com is your independent space to talk watches.
Just a heads up to any audiophiles listening, the following episode was the first time that T-San and I tried recording in person, and I was quite quiet and T-San was perfect as usual, but there's also quite a bit of background noise, which I'm learning from and I'll try sort out for the next episode. I hope you enjoy. Thanks. Hello and welcome to Driving Time. This is episode 5 of Driving Time, and this time it's something different. It's just going to be T-San and myself as we catch up after being apart and being busy for an extremely long period of time. And this is also our first time doing it in person. So T-San, how are you today?
I'm good, thanks, Tom. I've had a mixed bag, as I was saying to you earlier, including a funeral service, unfortunately, of a son of a close rowing friend. You never want your child to pass away before you do. So that was always a very reflective time. And then I had a coffee this afternoon, and we can talk about it a little bit further with a gentleman who shall remain unnamed for now, who's thinking of doing a Luft type of event or Luftgekühlt type of event in Australia sometime in the future, and wanted to catch up with me about what it was like attending Luft 8 a month or so ago, and then finishing up tonight with spending time with you talking watches and cars. So I think that's a fairly full day.
I would say so.
How was your day?
Good. Working 9 to 5. Making money.
Working for the man, making money, doing your time. It's something we talked about before. There's an age. I mean, I guess it makes sense. Your first sort of couple of years out of uni, there's an element of just having to put your head down and do the time before you, as your generation is wont to do. I think it's interesting. It's this, and look, it's admirable as well. You and your generation, I think, wants to seek fulfillment work-wise as well as life-wise. Mine was very much like, you know, you're grateful for your first job and you just do that for as long as you can. You were sort of saying you wanted to make use of both your degree and also what you wanted to do, which is great. But there is, I think, the piece of advice that was given to me early on when I felt that way was, you know, sometimes you just got to put your head down and do the hard yards, do the time, essentially.
Yeah.
And these opportunities will present themselves, or you can then go looking for it with some degree of experience behind you. But I know what that's like. I know and it's good to feel that way. It's kind of good to feel frustrated. I think it means that you're alive and you're young. When you get old, you don't want to give up. But I think there's an element of just accepting that things are the way that they are a little bit. And not saying one's right or wrong, but no, good on you. That's good. Got to do the 9 to 5, earn the money.
To pay for cars and watches, the fun things in life.
Indeed.
Is there any news or anything that you want to cover off that you can think of recently?
Well, look, it's been probably 3 months or so since I caught up with you. I came around to your place to have a look at your new apartment that you've moved out into, and I don't think we've seen each other since, but we've both probably done a lot of things in that time. I've been traveling for a lot of that, both with rowing and then a lot of car stuff in my holiday after that, and then I finished with a little bit more rowing as well, so happy to talk about that. I think there's quite a few interesting car events in there, a little bit of watch stuff in there as well. I'm sure there were plenty of watches that came out in the time that I was away as well, so happy to talk about any or all of that.
I'm looking through now SJX, just seeing if there's anything really worth talking about.
But that's your reference, is it?
It helps.
I can't keep up with all of the different...
It helps filter down to more what...
Yeah.
I wouldn't say there's anything really worth talking about from the point of view of not that...
Well, that's
If we did, we would remember it.
It's a sad reflection. Again, I don't know if it's where I'm at or whether it's the watches that are coming out, but... Certainly, I haven't felt the need to buy anything desperately that's been released in the last year, let alone the last couple of months. Having said that, I did pick up one or two things in my travels, as is the way, without necessarily planning to do that. So we can talk about that. I think the one watch I mentioned to you, though, that came out that I was interested in while we're away was the Baltic watch. I think it was a Tri-Compax, they called it. But it was essentially the chronograph that came out with a couple of stopwatches as well.
The Baltic Tri-Compax collaboration with Peter Auto.
Oh, it was a collaboration, of course. Yes. Look, you know, that watch had a very, you know, typically sort of Paul Newman look about it with the dial. And the size was appealing as always for me. Being 39.5, but I think it came with two stopwatches that you could mount in your car as well. And all of that for about 3,000 Aussie from memory as well. So that was pretty good value. And it's a brand that I like. It's a smaller micro brand that's done good things in quite different styles. And this one was particularly, good looking for me and appealing to me. But I think it sold out pretty quickly, which is great. I don't know what their limited run was, but it was limited and it did sell out. So that's always good for them. But I liked it. I liked it a lot. The colorway was unique. I wouldn't normally go for sort of orange and yellow, but I thought it might actually look quite good with one or two of my cars. Yeah, wasn't to be, and that's fine.
Yeah, it's certainly a very, like, the color scheme reminds me of, like, the, I mean, it's still used today, but the classic, like, TRD Toyota white car with a yellow and orange and a red stripe across it.
Right. I mean, orange is a great color. It actually does go with a lot of things, strangely enough. And it is very automotive. And in particular, the two stopwatches and the mount that it comes on is, you know, it's perfectly Hoyer-esque to be seen in many a dash of a 911 or Le Mans type of situation. I think it looks fantastic. And to find someone who's manufacturing a new one is pretty cool as well, because I know that there are car accessory manufacturers like Carbone, for example, that will charge, you know, $500 just for the mount alone, let alone two stopwatches as well. That's just a cool look. But I have often thought, as much as I love the idea, would I actually ever drill into my dash to mount them? I probably wouldn't. Would I put them on with 3M double-sided tape? Possibly. But do I think that my car needs stopwatches? And you were there supporting me the only time I've been on the track. The last thing I'm going to be doing is worrying about lap times or pressing buttons. I'm kind of too busy concentrating on what I'm doing. So
no,
it's a nice to have. It's not even close to, you know, a necessity.
They're not functional. They're a nice looking accessory.
A great looking accessory. And as I said, I think they've done a great job here and I'm glad that they sold out. But
I'm just hoping that they don't waste the tooling for, like, the dial, the case, and they don't just produce this one special edition and never do it again. I hope it becomes the Tri-Compax just becomes a regular line in different colorways.
That'd exactly. Nice. I think they probably won't do the stopwatches again and they might just do the same case and everything except for the dial and either make it plainer or in different colorways and maybe in... Well, they don't do limited editions anyway, but their watches do sell out, if you like. So, you know, it's...
Well, this was a limited...
This one was, but all their other stuff, it's just...
It's limited run. Correct. Where they produce it in batches.
Exactly, exactly.
Which is pretty common.
Yeah, for a micro brand. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I like that as well. So that was probably the standout one that I can remember while I was away. Some other nice little, you know, experiences while I was away. And I said to, I think, you and some car guys, with all of the, what they call it, the moon swatch hype that was around, with people lining up at different swatch stores, fights breaking out and all sorts of things going on, that the only way I'd ever buy one was if I was at an airport or just happened to be walking past a swatch watch shop overseas, literally popped my head in and said, "Do you have any available?" And they said, "Yes." That, you know, and I liked the color, particular colorway, and it was available at retail. It was probably the only way I was going to do it. And as it happened, I was in Milan, just spending the day looking around Milan. I'd never been there before with one of my other rowers, And toward the end of the day, we just happened to walk past a swatch shop. And I said, oh, do you mind if I just pop my head in? She's like, no, that's cool. So I popped my head in and said, do you happen to have any moon swatches? And they said, no, we've sold out. And I'm like, oh, that's fine. It's sold out in Australia as well. And they're like, oh, you're from Australia? And they're like, and I'm like, yeah. It's cool. Like, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they said, oh, what colors were you looking for? And I said, I'd probably be interested in the red or the black. And showing my ignorance, like I didn't even know what the black one's called. I know the red one's the Mars one. And she said, just hang on a second. And so she disappears out the back and then pops out with a bag that's already sealed closed, and said, here's a red one, but don't tell anyone, which is funny and sort of speaks to that artificial hype thing that is absolutely working for Rolex and for the moon swatch. But so anyway, I picked up the Mission to Mars that you're actually currently wearing on your wrist right now.
Yeah, I guess this is time to do wrist check and drink check.
Good point.
Considering we kind of skipped over that.
Sure.
It's been a little while. So yes, I'm wearing the Mission to Mars moon swatch that T-San grabbed while he was overseas and just drinking some sparkling water. I've learned if you never say, I'll only do this if this happens, because then it happens.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I must say that more often then. I will only have a threesome if... Is that how it works? I hope so. Mm. So I am wearing my Porsche Design chronograph, the Top Gun, essentially, which is relevant because I haven't stopped watching Top Gun since it's come out, both at the cinema, in the airplane, and now on DVD. And yes, I still... buy DVDs and watch DVDs. And Charis quite rightly said, why am I watching standard definition? I'm like, because I don't care. And it's actually the second watch I mentioned. I went to a service earlier today. I wore my Rossons to that. I wore a suit for the first time in 4 or 5 years. I hardly wore a suit anyway when I did work, and I haven't worked for 6 months now. And I obviously was working from home like everyone else during COVID. So yeah, I was like, wow, I've got to find appropriate clothing to wear to this service, and put on a suit, and then thought, what should I wear with that as well? So decided on the Rossons. So as usual, 2 or 3 different watches possibly in one day. And I'm drinking just a little bit of Milton spiced rum with dry ginger ale just to get me in the mood to kick off.
I guess we just hop into your travels overseas.
Yeah.
Where do you want to start?
Well, from the beginning, I guess. So it was the 21st of August. I left Melbourne, went to Canberra for a week, which is always an experience, Canberra in the middle of winter. And then we went back to Italy, a place called Gavarate, which is about an hour from Milan, where I'd been in May. And we trained there for 3 weeks. So that was beautiful weather, suntan, good food, 2 or 3 gelatos a day. But as I said, probably the watch highlight there was ducking into Milan for the day and looking around. I mean, Milan I'd not been to before, so the cathedral and some other sites and the world's oldest shopping centre, which isn't a big place, but it's beautiful. Good coffee, and finding the watch was nice, and doing a little bit of shopping with Jess, the girl that I was spending the day with from my crew. And cars wise, I mean, again, I don't know if I mentioned it from the first time I went there, but Italy, probably like a lot of Europe, the uptake in electric cars is huge. They just seem to be every second car. And in this particular town that we stay in, Gavarate, there's always a lot of Fiats. I think there's probably a lot of Fiats in Italy anyway, but new ones and old ones, a couple of old ones that kind of live in the town and cruise around. So they're always beautiful to see. And I always put those on my Insta. So that was Italy. And then we went to the World Championships in Prague. Again, I'd never been to Prague before. It certainly had a little sort of the leftover Eastern Bloc feel about it. I don't think any cars to speak of. Although I noticed just today there's an Instagram update of a car. A dude bought a 911, an old one, and spray painted it like progressively different colours from the bonnet right through to the back. It looks quite good, but certainly very brave thing to do. And he was channeling that sort of Remember the art cars of the within the 90s when they spray painted all of the M cars, the
BMW.
Yeah, the M1s were they?
BMW have done it for numerous different race cars over the years. They normally will get a big name artist,
right,
to just do an artwork on the car.
Well, that inspired him, and then we had the World Championships, which ended in us coming fourth, which is the worst possible place to come, and I've come fourth before.
Is it worse than second, though?
It is, absolutely. Well, worse than second. Second, you feel the immediate disappointment of not winning, but then later on you go, well, at least I've got something to show for it. Fourth is just, we call it the potato. So everyone gets a medal, first, second, and third, and as fourth, you just basically get a big fat potato, a big zero. So that was very disappointing, but again, nice to have a look around Prague. And then from there, I went on a ridiculous, holiday. The day after, I went to Berlin and met up with one of my good mates who had run the Berlin Marathon the day before. And we went for a walk around all of the monuments of Berlin. I'd not been to Berlin before, and it's pretty impressive. Then the next day, he chuffed off, and I had half a day. So I went to this place. Did you see it, Tom? It was this... I would describe it almost like as... Dutton's, if Dutton's and Lorbeck and Classic Throttle Shop plus a couple of mechanics were all in the same sort of big building, then that's what this was called. And as I'm just scrolling through my own Insta, I'll be able to identify what it was actually called. Yeah, here we go. Classic Remise, R-E-M-I-S-E. So if you're ever in Berlin, I absolutely would recommend going to this place. It doesn't cost anything. I thought it was maybe like a museum or something like that you'd had to pay, but no, it's just always open to the public. And as I said, there would be, I assume half the cars there are in storage and the other half are for sale. And there's mechanics in there working on stuff all the time. But as is the case, it felt like half of the cars there were Porsche and then lots of other beautiful cars as well. Obviously, German cars make up a big part of that as well. So some beautiful old BMWs. Yeah, so that was Berlin. Then I went back to Stuttgart, where I was in May as well, because I wanted to see the latest exhibition of the RS 2.7 Carrera that they had at the Porsche Museum. So that was good going back there, very familiar space, and spent one afternoon in the Porsche Museum and then the next morning back in the Porsche Museum. Then I chuffed off. Met a mate in Ibiza. I'd never been to Ibiza before. That was amazing. Good 3 days partying, basically, at my age, which was surprisingly successful and fun and amazing what time you can stay up to in the morning when you're having fun. Well,
certainly being home in Melbourne, Australia, waking up each morning and checking my Instagram, it was like, oh, okay, yep, Milan, yep, that's pretty standard. Oh, Prague, okay. Berlin, yep. Oh, back to Stuttgart, Porsche's thing. Next morning, wake up. What the... Is he doing in Ibiza?
Ibiza? What are you doing? Yeah, exactly. So, again, I met up with one of my oldest friends, Orlando, who lives in London there, and he was there with, I think, six other mates who were all in banking and finance. So they're all in banking and finance, and I'm doing my thing. But it just ended up being a really great group of guys. You know, we just ate well and... drank well and partied well and danced well, and I was really surprised. It was not at all what I thought it was going to be. It was the kind of place where I think you can be of any age and have a great time, and everyone was in a good mood. There was, I think, because, you know, it's not an alcohol-fueled situation. It's more of a drug-induced type of situation to a degree. People are actually...
Everyone's more sedate.
Yeah, everyone's in love with everyone, you know. So someone treads on your foot, you end up hugging them. You don't end up getting into a fight. So it's that type of situation. So that went on for 3 days. That was fantastic. Highly recommend that. Then I had a couple of days in Barcelona on my own. And then I went to LA to meet up with another good friend of mine, Daniel, who lives in New York, who'd never really spent much time in LA. And the whole reason behind that was to go to Luftgekühlt or Luft 8. The eighth one that they've had.
If I can just cut in quickly.
Yeah, sure.
Because I've been to Barcelona.
Yeah.
How'd you find the La Sagrada Familia?
Well, I with my dad being an architect and my mother being an art teacher, it wasn't shocking to me in any way. Like I know that type of, that artwork or that movement. So I really liked it, from the outside, and from the inside even more. And then I went to a couple of the other things, you know, that are around there as well. Like, is it the Gaudi, garden, for example? I love all of that sort of stuff. So I was very impressive, very impressive. And so I'd been to Barcelona before, but I'd not been into the cathedral before.
Okay.
So going into it was, as I said, like it was impressive. The obviously the light and stained glass is always a feature in pretty much any cathedral, but in its particular type of style, it was fantastic. So yeah, I enjoyed that. I ate very well in Barcelona. I just went back to places that I knew that I liked.
I know it blew me, or us as a family, when we went 5 or 6 years ago now, maybe more.
Yeah.
And the fact that it had been like under construction for 150 years or
permanently under construction.
And it's still going to be under construction.
I think it always will be.
30 or 50 years is what they're projecting.
Well, what I found amusing was, I remember last time I went, I tried to get photos of it from the outside without the crane getting in the way, because there's a crane like permanently on it. And this time, I even noticed that some of the artwork or paintings that have been done of it actually include the crane. So that's what I like, that sort of stuff. Like the crane is now actually part of the building. It is part of the of its look. You know, it's as much part of it as the sculpture and the other bits and pieces. So it was amazing. You know, you go to these things, and the garden was the same. And you're just kind of thankful that they exist. I know it doesn't appeal to everyone's taste, but much like cars, you just go, well, okay, well, you know, I probably will never buy a Ford, but that doesn't mean I can't see some beauty in it. Well, some old Fords are fantastic. Ford Bronco, I fell in love with again in Southern California when I was there. But so you sort of look at these things and go, well, okay, it might not necessarily be everyone's cup of tea or even my cup of tea, but I can see the amazing beauty and craftsmanship in it. So yeah, and then we went to LA and we stayed in Venice Beach for a couple of days, and we hired a red convertible Mustang and drove to Joshua Tree into the desert and went hiking. Then we ended up down at the port of Los Angeles where Luft 8 was being held. I woke up early on the morning, a little bit excited, and Daniel was still asleep. So I went downstairs and literally stood in front of my hotel and watched, you know, 100 Porsches arrive, drive past, which was exciting. And then we went and lined up for the early bird entry, which was at 8 a.m. And there was a huge line. And by the time we got in, it was probably about 8:30. And we looked around for up until, you know, we did a couple of rounds till about 12:30. And I thought, it's probably pushing, you know, a friend who's not really even a car guy to spend the whole day. So we went off and did some other things, and then we went back into LA proper for the last 2 days. We were in LA and went to the Peterson Museum that had quite a few interesting exhibitions on as well. Saw Magnus Walker's 277 car.
Because now he's doing a...
he's got his own exhibition of 10 of his cars on,
yeah,
which I was always going to miss by a couple of days because...
Yeah, it was just after you came back.
Yeah, and I was conscious that we couldn't stay there that long.
It might have even been...
No, it was 10 days. It was 3 days after I left LA,
but I was
going back to New York.
I remember that you had, you'd like posted something in New York, next thing, Magnus Walker.
Yes.
And it was like, oh, you missed it by...
But I know what I really would have loved to have done. So what I didn't realize, well, because I don't think it was well publicized. So he bumped into his event while we were there, which is why I saw the 277 car. But okay, I didn't see the other 10 cars because they were hidden away in a part of the museum that wasn't open yet to the public. Okay. But the bump-in night he organized, if I got this right from browsing Instagram and his posts, I think he organized for 10 of his mates to come to his place and drive his 10 cars in the middle of the night from his place to the Peterson Museum. Now, that would have been good to be, because we were only a kilometer away from the Peterson Museum. That would have been great to go and just hang out at the front of the Peterson and see these cars rock up. But yeah, so I was just pity I didn't see those cars, but because he's got an ice cream metallic turbo. I don't know if it's one of the ones on display, but I know he's definitely got that car. And At Luft, I probably saw about 4 ice green cars, which is certainly more than I thought I would see, but it was good to see them.
Oh, that's another thing we need to cover.
Ah.
And,
okay, yeah, we
have done that in the news, to be honest.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. That's a fair amount of news.
If you haven't been following T-San on Instagram, I don't know what you're doing, but he recently purchased a ice cream metallic...
Birth year. Yeah. So it's a 1974 911S coupe in ice cream metallic. And I certainly hadn't planned to do this. I was and still very much in love with my 1978 Grand Prix white Targa SC, but I think I was at a rowing camp in Canberra a couple of months, probably 3 months ago now, and I was just scrolling Facebook Marketplace, as you do, and I think Marketplace also loops into some of our Facebook groups, whether they be car groups or watch groups, or you can post in both places, something like that.
Yeah, you can, yeah.
So anyway, up pops this beautiful, I don't know where it was it Marketplace or one of the Facebook groups, but up pops this beautiful looking Porsche. And what's interesting is that, you know, I'm not technically too deep into watches or cars, as you probably have picked up on. Like, my little brain can only handle so much information, but I know what I like when I see it. And this thing popped up and I'm like, wow, that is just beautiful. And what's beautiful about it is it's really chromey. Like, it's got chrome headlights, it's got a chrome side mirror, it's got bright work, I think they call it, or in auto speak. A lot of bright work all over it. It's a strange one. It sort of looks like the older cars, the Longwoods of 73 and earlier, and yet it's the first year of the impact bumpers, or the accordion bumpers, or the short hoods, or the G series. So... and there's a reason for that, because they had to bring in this impact bumper into the States for safety reasons. And in my opinion, Porsche probably did the best job of integrating this impact bumper into their cars. If you have a look at Mercedes of the time in America, Alfa Romeo as well, they just don't look great. In fact, some of them look horrendous, especially the Mercs. But Porsche, you know, I think it's now very much part of the look of the G series that makes it so great, is this impact bumper. But what's interesting is they basically just put an impact bumper onto a long hood. That's kind of how this 1974 car of mine in ice cream metallic looks. You know, it looks almost more 1973 and earlier than it does 1974 and later. So, yeah, so anyway, so I was in Canberra, saw this car pop up, didn't think anything... Well, I thought it was beautiful, but didn't think anything of it. And then a couple of days later, I'm driving up to Sydney, and I thought, oh, I think that car's in Sydney. I might just reach out to the owner and see if it's still available and if it's possible for me to come and have a look at it. I did. I think that was on a Friday. And by Sunday, I'd driven it a couple of times and we'd shaken hands on it. And I went to the bank on Monday morning and handed over a check and drove it back to Melbourne the next day. As is always the case, as I was reminded with, same with the Targa, you probably spend the first 6 to 12 months getting to know the car and ironing out any issues that you feel you have with the car, / making little enhancements here and there that you want to have with the car. So at the moment, there's a few things that I want to do. I want, like I did with the Targa, I want to upgrade the rear sway bar so it's firmer and has that stability in its rear. There's some little things, like you can't open the passenger door from the inside but you can from the outside. I'm sure that's just something that's come loose. So it's been resprayed in its original color. It looks beautiful. It's lovely to have a car that's in sort of showroom condition. Whereas the Targa is, as you know, very much in everyday driving condition. And what I've done is I've actually put the ice screen on club plates, which means that I can only drive it once or twice a week anyway. So I'm driving it on the weekends and driving the Targa on weekdays and very happy. So, yeah, that's It's a bit like watches, I guess. It's like you don't, sometimes you don't plan to do these things, and it comes about, and you just do it. So, yeah. And I haven't regretted it, and I love it, and it really is a beautiful looking car, in my opinion.
Yeah. So in Australia, and it's particularly big here in Victoria. I know New South Wales have it. I'm not sure who else. But the government introduced a system called club registration, where if you're part of a associated and approved car club and your car is over 25 years old, you can apply to have this special registration, which is cheaper but limits the amount you can drive the car, which is perfect for most of those vehicles because they generally sit around and don't get driven all that often.
Yeah, you have to have a roadworthy. I'd say the rego is like 20% the cost of normal rego. Yeah.
And they have periods that you can allocate how many days of the year you're going to drive it as well.
Right. But the main one is you don't have to pay stamp duty on it when you buy a car.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the huge one. That's probably, I mean, if it weren't for that, I probably would have put it on full rego. Because as you know, like my white car, I like to drive it whenever I want. But stamp duty on a lot of money is a lot of money.
And then there's also caveats on the registration as well, that you get given a logbook and you have to, every time you drive it, you have to log the odometer and
absolutely
what you're driving it for.
Yep. If you get caught without it, having filled that book out, you're essentially driving unregistered.
Yeah. And then there's variants of it as well, that there's modified, which lets you, it's a similar thing, but you can have modified cars, whether it's like a big engine swap, things like that. And then there's also rally permits, which is the same thing, but for competition rally vehicles. But that has even more caveats, that you can only drive it to and from competition event and competition stages.
Right.
And then to and from mechanics or to get work done.
It's interesting. I think Victoria, it reflects Victorians' love of old cars.
Yeah.
And I suspect that I could be speaking out of school, but it feels to me that there's more car lovers in Melbourne than perhaps anywhere else. And I think this scheme sort of reflects that. Sydney has the heritage plates, but it feels harder in some ways than...
Yeah, you certainly see a lot more club plates around in Victoria than you do see historic plates. Like, I've seen them on cars that you wouldn't necessarily think...
Yeah, like a Laser. Like a Ford Laser from the 80s or 90s.
Because there's certain people that they see it as, I work from home 3 days a week or 4 days a week. I only needed to go to the office one day. And I might go out on the weekend and go to the beach. So I only need to drive my car 2 or 3 days a week.
And my car's over 25 years old, and I can join a Ford Laser car club that happens to exist in Melbourne.
Saves me heaps on rego, all these kinds of things.
Yeah.
And I know internationally they have similar things in other countries. Like, I think that there's something similar in England and the USA, but don't know much more.
So coming back to what we're talking about, I mean, it's interesting how you buy yourself a new car, and suddenly I had a whole new focus when I went to the Porsche Museum. Like, I was interested in Ice Cream Metallic, of which there's actually one car there that's in Ice Cream Metallic. I'm also interested in cars there was a very specific period, 74 to 77.
Transition period.
Yeah, it's got another word for it as well. It's the much maligned period, and this is going back 3 years when cars weren't as ridiculously expensive as they are today. And as is the case with watches, you know, when certain areas get too expensive, then people look to where the value is in other areas, and that's exactly where this car is at the moment. I think it now doesn't matter. Like, you know, a 911, any 911 is expensive now.
Yep.
And for a good reason. You know, they're a finite, well-engineered, beautifully styled item. So, you know, people want it. But going around the Porsche Museum and then going around Luftgekühlt or Luft 8 in Los Angeles and seeing You know, four other cars in Ice Cream Metallic was great as well. And just generally looking at cars in that 1974, 75, 76, 77 period, especially 74 and 75 have a few little quirks that are great. Like they're the only ones generally with the chrome side mirror that's the same as the 73 and earlier. So it shares a lot of little features with the Carrera RS 2.7, which is now a 1 million USD or a 2 million AUD car. And there's actually one for sale at the moment at Porsche Den in Melbourne, which just has been completely restored and looks like a brand new car. So yeah, it's really nice going to something with a new focus and really sort of observing and noticing things because of that. And also what was amazing to me, which I'd never expected, was to be blown away by just the general car culture in California. Like, you know, I was struck by it. We would be having a coffee at 7 a.m. On Abbot Kinney Boulevard, which is a couple of streets back from Venice Beach. And we'd be sitting out the front of a coffee shop drinking a takeaway coffee, and another couple would come out. They would open up the boot of their, you know, whether it was a Land Rover Defender or a Jeep Cherokee or whatever, and sit in the boot of their car drinking the coffee. Some other dude would come out with their coffee and they'd say, "Oh, is that your Jeep across the road?" And he's like, "Yeah." And they're like, "Oh man, I really like what you've done with the car. Like, I like the accessories you put on it." They stood there for half an hour talking about each other's cars. And these people weren't even car people, I'm pretty sure. They were just part of the culture of California. And you've got old cars, new cars, just driving by all the time. And people enjoying their cars. And, I mean, again, for people who don't know, it's something that I learned. You know, California is one of the best places to buy cars because of the weather, the lack of rust. But also, I think, because of this car culture. You know, it's amazing. And I was blown away by it. And it's no surprise that that's where, essentially, Luftgekühlt is headquartered. They do move it around each year to different locations, but a lot of the time it's in California. And it was really driven home when I went to New York and Washington for a couple of days. You just don't see the cars that you see in California. And you don't see the volume, you don't see the variety, you don't see the love and the passion.
This is Washington DC, yes?
Yeah. Yeah,
so
yeah,
from my experience as well, Washington DC and New York, you're dealing with a whole other group of people.
Yeah.
Like LA is generally the laid back, fun loving things like that, whereas New York is very much like big business centric and
yep.
things like that.
Yeah.
And there's not really a need for cars because you're stuck in traffic the entire time.
Yeah, you're on the island.
Public transport.
Yeah.
And then Washington DC, it's just all
government mainly, workers.
Yeah, political government yeah. workers and things like that. Yeah. But
couldn't get a more boring car culture, really,
it's all just government provided vehicles pretty much.
Politicians and lobbyists.
Yeah.
I was struck by how boring the cars were there. Great, having said that,
great if you want to see big
monuments,
big trucks, big American trucks, but that's about it.
Yeah. So I enjoyed Washington. I've not been there either. I've been threatened to go there for so long because I go to New York about once a year if I can. And you know, the monuments and Lincoln and the White House and especially the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum that I spent one afternoon and one morning in as well. That was fantastic. But yeah, car-wise, I was blown away by California. I really was. And again, it's funny because, you know, I hadn't noticed it so much before. Maybe that's because I wasn't as into cars. I don't know. But yeah, so that was the trip. And then we went up to Boston for another regatta, which we won, which was fantastic. We'd won it in 2017, 18 and 19 as well. So we won it again this year. With most of the same crew, we had three different members in, and it was a real great race for me. Lots of steering, a great crew who did exactly what I needed to them to do when I needed them to do it, and we came away with the win and a record time. And I think the closest competitors to us were over 30 seconds behind us. So, yeah, it was over 3 miles. So that was a really really great way to finish the holiday. But by then I was ready to come home and get back here. I've been home for a week, started both my cars, both the batteries were flat because of course I'm still learning these things and didn't put them on a drip charger. I went out and bought myself something I've been planning to buy for a long time anyway, one of those Noco, Noco, is that what the brand? But it's like a quick charger, like a jump starter, a portable jump starter, which brought the Targa back to life, but the 74, the one I just bought, it's probably an old battery anyway, so it didn't come back to life. So I went and bought myself a new battery and it just fired back up. So I've been driving both cars over the last week. And enjoying getting back into that, seeing the kids, catching up with car friends and now watch friends. So, yeah, it's been good just settling back into it. Well, I had a weekend away in Daylesford, which was lovely. So nice to take the Targa out there for a drive as well. The weather was beautiful on Sunday. So hopefully more drives ahead of us as Melbourne comes into more of a summery look and feel.
Yeah.
So it was a big trip.
Were you here for the... It would have been just before you turned up. We had a couple of days where it was like, oh yeah, we're actually in spring again. It's really nice. There was like two or three days where it was mid-20s over a weekend.
Was this before or after the floods that I read about?
Oh, no, it was before the floods.
Yeah, yeah. So this is overseas. We're hearing about these floods in Melbourne.
It was like...
I'm picturing both my cars being underwater in the basement of my apartment block.
Yeah, classic Melbourne. It gave us like a weekend of beautiful weather. And we're like, oh, we're in spring. It's going to be good from here. And then it's just been two or three weeks of downpour.
Yeah, back into
We've had floods. We've had, oh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so that, look, it was a great trip. Lots of car stuff and watch stuff and friends stuff and rowing stuff. So, but it's a long time. It was well over 2 months to be away. So it's nice to be back.
Yeah. The floods in Melbourne were surreal for me because I'd seen flooding on TV and things like that before.
Yeah.
But it's completely different when you're looking on the TV and you're looking at the places where you grew up and went regularly and going, yeah, that's the place I used to go and it's completely underwater.
It's like a meter underwater.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of our friends who's in the little Porsche group that we're in, she lives near Flemington Racecourse and her street was underwater. Their house was luckily up on the high side of the street, but the car parked on the other side of the street was underwater. I mean, it was a write-off. So you look at that sort of stuff and it's pretty confronting. You know, hopefully everyone has insurance, but not everyone does.
Yeah,
so it's great. You know, good to be back and already throwing myself in the car stuff. Like I went to Lawbeck the other day and had a look at some cars that looked fantastic as I drove by. So I went and checked them out. They've actually got a couple of old beautiful Ferraris there from the 70s and... actually, a lot of 70s cars, Ferraris, Stingrays, Mustangs. Yeah, so sort of doing the rounds again and hopefully going on a few drives. So, like every weekend, there's some stuff on. I think there's something coming up this weekend. Shannon's has an auction. So we'll go check out those cars for Cars and Coffee out there. I think the new GT4 RS is being delivered to all of the Porsche dealerships this week. So... people are going to check those out as well. The mid-engine Cayman version, which essentially is a better car than any 911. You're rolling your eyes, you don't agree?
No, there's...
I mean, mid-engine for a start is a better place to have an engine than in the rear, right?
Yes. Yeah, it should overall be a better car, but they've held it back again from the point of view of it was like, we've given it the good engine and everything this time, and then they... drop the 3RS and it's like, but it doesn't have all that active aerodynamics.
Right.
And all the active. So,
yeah,
it still should be in theory better. But again, they've held that last tenth now with the...
Yeah, I don't think they should be worried about it.
For a street car, it doesn't matter. But at the same time, the new RS is really with the PDK only and everything. It's more aimed at a track car, similar to the new 3RS.
Right.
Certainly the RS Monica has gone, swung a lot more back to
track
focused than...
You know I'm hopeless with this detail, but I get what you're saying, yeah. Yeah, I don't know, like, I'm not precious about the 911 from that perspective, like, I don't think there's a problem with saying, okay, from now on, the 911 won't be the best car that Porsche sells. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah. But a lot of people do.
Yeah.
Not some people have small, fragile egos. That...
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing I would liken it to was when they went from air to water, you know, the 996. And I couldn't even imagine being part of the Porsche group when that happened. Like, that would have just been, people would have been losing their minds. And I guess in some ways this is a sort of similar scenario. To say the 911 isn't actually the best car that Porsche make anymore, you know, I can see why that would be a problem for a lot of owners.
Well, the 4RS is like, it's the send-off for the Cayman and the Boxer, because now they're going electric in the next model.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
This was the...
Okay.
This is the one-off. Like, this is the end. We're going to give you what you've been asking for.
Yeah.
And you're not getting it again.
Yeah. Well, I know one guy in our group who's put down an order. So I don't know when you get it. I'm assuming 12 to 18 months would be the standard.
Yeah. They're assuming your boat doesn't sink. And
yeah. Yes. And then you still get chips from where? From China or something?
You haven't specced carbon ceramics, which are produced in the Ukraine. And
right.
Yeah. There's right. a lot of...
Well, I'll never have to worry about that because I don't have that type of money, so it's okay. But I will live vicariously through him and be very, very, very happy for him. And, you know, I think we're going, yeah, as a group to go and check out these cars.
Does he only street drive it, or does he track?
He's more of a street driver, but I guess if you had a car like that, why wouldn't you do both?
It's just, from what I've heard, it's pretty extreme on the road.
Right, right. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what he does. He's a great young man, so it'll be a great experience for him and for us. Definitely. So yeah, that's the weekend. So yeah, back into normal life. So
I guess I haven't updated that
car update.
That I bought a new car over 12 months ago.
Yeah.
That nothing has happened.
Yes.
And it was a similar scenario to what T-San said. So I'd competed in a 4-hour race with my dad, done my first race. Got 3 laps into it, had the motor in my car explode, as rotaries tend to do, because I'd had a previous experience where the last event I drove it, I over revved the motor twice and broke the gearbox in it, and we suspect that I might have damaged one of the side seals during the over revs. So then I got 3 laps into a 4-hour race and side seal exited through the exhaust, and that was the end of compression for the motor. So it was down one rotor and that was the end of the day. And we'd known that on the Friday. We'd had some issues where I stalled it coming into the pits and it didn't want to refire. So we thought it's either a dead battery or it's on the way out. We put a new battery in it, had the same issues, and we went, okay, it's on the way out. So we went into the Motec and basically put it on, this will get it running and it'll run, but it's going to kill it at the same time. So we don't know how, like, this will mean you'll be able to drive tomorrow in the race and do what you need to do, but we don't know at what point in the race it's going to expire.
Oh, okay.
So we'd mentally prepared that the motor was going to go. We were just hoping it might be 2 hours in or 3 hours in, not 3 laps. So anyway, after that, I was a bit down for a little while because I just spent a whole bunch of money rebuilding the gearbox, put a new gearbox in it, and now I was looking at spending a whole bunch of money rebuilding the motor. Tore the motor down, figured out what we could keep, what had to be basically tossed in the bin, start again. Looked at our options, decided on the right way we were going to go, but weren't in a hurry because I needed to save money and we needed to wait for some parts because I was looking for some special stuff. But in the meantime, I was sitting at home one day browsing Facebook, similar to T-San.
It's very dangerous, isn't it?
And came across a car in this group. It was a race car. And in my car, I needed a new motor, obviously. And I also wanted to put in a digital race dash so I could get timing and telemetry in the car so I could improve my driving and not just go around in circles at the end of a 10-minute session, walk in and go, okay, what was I doing that actually improved my times, or if I was improving my times or not. And this car had those two things. And my dad, who had finished up where he'd been working for many, 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 many years, was on some leave before he started a new position, He'd just been sitting there watching YouTube videos and decided he wanted a three-rotor car. Didn't know what, just wanted a car with a three-rotor in it, which is a the biggest production rotary Mazda produced. And we know a couple of people that have had that have cars in it that we've heard, and they just sound amazing. He's been lucky enough to drive one in a race car and loved it. So I said to him, jokingly, I was like, hey, buy this car, I'll buy the motor off you and then the dash in it, the digital dash, and then now you've got the base for your three-rotor car and you just need to go find a motor and blah, 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 and you're good to go. Anyway, he sat on it for about half an hour and he's come back to me. He's gone, you know, if you do this, you can buy that car. And the car was an FD RX-7. So the one from the 90s, the real...
Is that swoopy, the one that killed Bathurst as well?
Yes, the timeless design one that it dominated the Porsches at Bathurst.
Dominated. And, not just Porsches, but every other car.
So...
Even I wasn't really a non-car person at that time, and even I was like, what are Mazdas doing winning Bathurst? Because Bathurst was the domain of Ford and Holden in my mind back then. Yeah,
this was a different race to that. So this was the Bathurst 12-hour.
Yeah.
Which at that time was like, turn up with a road car.
Yeah.
And put safety equipment in it and run it.
Yeah. So the GTR was also...
So that was at the Bathurst 1000. Oh, okay, which was it? Race prepped.
Right.
Vehicles that look like road cars but are generally stripped out with all purpose-built bits in it.
Right.
Whereas the 12-hour at the time, it's since changed, but at the time it was a production car-based race.
Right.
So you'd turn up with a car from a showroom.
Stick a roll cage in it.
Stick a roll cage in it, seat harnesses, and away you go.
Yeah. I was surprised.
But a lot of the manufacturers...
They went a little bit further.
Yeah. When you've got manufacturer money and it means so much, they were purpose-building cars, which Mazda eventually did with the SP. But anyway, this was riders internationally, but particularly in Australia, they had started to go up in value.
Yeah.
And...
They've gone berserk.
Yeah, this is as it started.
Yeah.
And I had basically, like, I'd said to myself, it was like, it was a dream car, but at the prices, I was like, oh, I'm never going to afford one of those. Or for the money people were asking for it, was it worth it versus something else?
Yeah.
But anyway, it was, he's come back to me. He's like, here is someone selling your dream car. It needs a little bit of work to get it running. But from our experience we've had previously, it needs a lot of work for it to be done how I want it to be done.
Yep.
So then I sat there for half an hour, did my man maths.
So your dad sat for half an hour, you sat for half an hour. I probably spent about half an hour thinking about my purchase as well.
Yeah, so I did the man maths for about half an hour, thought about it, weighed up the pros and cons, and just went,
let's do this.
I can do it, let's do it. So, it was basically like, I had projected how much money I needed to rebuild my motor.
Yep.
I just rebuilt the gearbox, so we knew what a fresh gearbox was worth, and we knew roughly what my car as a rolling shell was worth.
Right.
So, those three things combined equaled this car, which is a 90% complete car.
Yep.
Just needed a couple of things to touch it up.
I'm sorry, I'm just giggling at 90% complete, because it's always that last 10%, isn't it?
We'll get to that. So we then decided, okay, we're going to do this, but we're going to do our due diligence first. So we went through the photos. We're like, okay, we started spotting some things. We asked the guy some questions. He sent some more photos, and we flagged a couple of things that we had issue with from our point of view, but we went and checked things. Like, we got him to send us the VIN, so we checked the VIN to make sure that we could find it wasn't stolen.
Written off.
Well, it's a race car. From what we've seen so far, getting the car, it doesn't look like it's been in any major incident. We tried to find a history on the car if we could, but we struggled. It was one of those things of, it got repainted at some point, and we don't know when that point was. And it was originally in WA racing in a series that these cars dominated in like the early 2000s to early 2010s.
Mm-hmm.
and it's red underneath but yellow on, like, it was originally a red car but it's since been painted yellow. And there's a couple of cars that we found were like, well, it could be that one, that one, that one, or that one. We don't know. So we never...
But that doesn't mean necessarily anything in of itself that your car's repainted, does it?
No, it was just... We tried to trace the history because...
Yeah. But doesn't it mean it was in a big bang-up and so, you know, you're trying to change it or anything?
So normally with a car that's been roll-caged and everything in Australia, it has a Motorsport Australia book, but at some point it got... lost.
Right.
So we checked to make sure it had one, and it had one. So we're like, okay, cool. We just need to file some... We called them and made sure, and they're like, yep, it had one at some point. We'll just need you to file like a declaration that you now own the car and things like that to get it back.
Right.
And fill in details on the car to make sure it matches what we have.
Yeah.
So I took the plunge, bought the car. It's been 12 months. Nothing has happened on the car, because step one was I took a loan off my parents, because my dad was happy to pay for the gap that I couldn't afford, because it was about mid-year, June, July, August time that the car popped up and we decided on it. But I had basically already forecast to rebuild my engine, the time it was going to take, the amount of money I required. I basically wasn't going to have the money until about Christmas time.
Yeah.
So my dad's like, yep, I'm happy to foot the difference for that period. And then in that time, I got a job full time.
Hence no podcasts.
Hence no podcast. Well, some of the podcasts I did, I had the job, but I lost a lot of time to... I was making money, but then I lost time to get to the car and work on the car. A lot of... we paid a deposit on the car with a plan to go have someone that was local go see it.
Where was it?
It was in Central Coast in New South Wales.
Yeah.
And we have a family friend that has a FDRX7 in Newcastle, so he knows the cars, knows what he's looking for, things like that. So he was going to go see it.
Yeah.
And a day before he was going to go see it, this is like peak COVID. Central Coast was a hot zone.
Oh,
and
that's right. They had a big breakout, yeah.
And it got locked down for months.
Yeah.
So we got to the point where it had been 2 or 3 months. We were just getting itchy, basically. So I foot the bill to have... because we were originally... We were going to go up. My dad and I go pick up the car and drive it back.
Yeah.
But then after I got the job... It was like, well,
just get it transported.
We're not going to have the time for it, so we got it transported down by a guy.
I've had a couple of... I had the Targa transported down with Siva, which I think is like a very...
Yeah, sort of, because it was prime COVID and difficult to get through borders and things like that.
Yeah.
Big companies were charging big dollars.
Oh, right. Because Siva's normally probably the cheapest, I would have thought.
They're normally expensive, but you generally pay for what you get. Like, okay. They're not the most expensive, but we talked with some contacts that were dad had used previously through racing, and they were all just like, look, I'm flat out, and I'm charging like I'm flat
for
out.
For it, yeah.
So, because of all the extra work as well that they had to go through, because I think at that point it was like you need a COVID test every 3 days that's negative to be able to transit the borders.
Hasn't life changed so much
compared
to those days?
So, yeah, we managed to find a guy that he was just, like, in the perfect position that he was on the way through the area. He was coming back from Queensland. He had a free spot, and it just worked out.
Good.
It was like, well, I'm on the trip anyway. I'll throw it in the back.
Yep. So what's the plan going forward?
Well, I said it was a 90% complete car.
And I laughed, yep.
Well, this is where the stupid stuff starts. The electronics package in it was an older Heltec unit, so an older computer and wiring and things like that.
Yeah.
And our engine builder has a very specific way he does things, and it's from years of trial and error, and he uses this brand of thing and this specific thing and not that because he's had those fail on him and these haven't failed on him and things like that.
Yeah.
So... after just having an engine fail, we don't really know the history of the engine in the car.
Yeah.
So it was like, right, I'm going to take the extra time, spend that little bit extra money and do it once, do it properly, and get the car rewired.
Yep.
So, for the massive nerds out there, this will mean nothing to TSAN, but it's getting rewired on a Motec M130, the PDM30 controlling power distribution. Instead of fuses and relays, it's just going to have a little black box that does it all electronically. And then also, it's more than likely going to have a C127 dash, so a 7-inch full-color digital dash display.
Wow. Well, I don't know about nerdy details, but rewiring a car is not a small deal, is it?
No.
Yeah, that much I do know.
So, I spent probably, it was 3 weekends, just not being efficient, but just by myself as like a to-do work where I wasn't paying someone else to do it, and as a just relaxation from work and life and things like that. I spent 3 days up in his shed because we dropped the car off to him, and I pulled out all the fuel tank and all the pumps and the lines and everything. I pulled out all the wiring out of the car.
Yep.
And boxed it all up, and then it was being built for Time Attack.
Yeah.
So one lap dash.
Yeah.
And I'm planning to run it in more endurance events, so extended period driving. So I had a tiny little fuel tank in it that wasn't really going to cut it for.
How small was it?
I can't remember. It was probably a 20 to 30 litre tank, I would guess. Maybe a 40.
Yeah. I only laugh because we'll get to the size of my fuel tanks in a second. Yeah. So then what are you putting into it?
We're looking at options to try put an 80 litre tank in the car.
That's pretty large, isn't it, these days? But because...
It's not too big, but...
Really? Because I was surprised because most cars, including SUVs that are sold today, have a 50 litre tank, which seemed normal until my old cars, the Porsches, have an 80 litre tank. And I guess when you think about, well, what was technology back then? It was basically you put in a bigger engine and it drinks more fuel. So you need a big tank.
Yeah.
So that's what they did. But one of the Porsche guys who has I think it's a G series as well, Tim Vo, he's got a beautiful blue car that he brings to Lufthansa from Queensland. He drives down for that. He's just upgrading from an 80 litre tank to a 100 litre tank. And I thought that was a bit of an upgrade.
Well, I was originally planning on trying to drop a 100 litre tank in it, because based off the class rules I was originally looking at, that was the biggest I could fit in it.
Yeah.
And it's been converted to a big TO4Z single turbo, so it's probably going to drink quite a bit of fuel.
Yeah.
But then the event that I ran last year, the 4-hour race, 80 litres is their limit that you have compulsory pit stop time.
Yeah.
And if your fuel tank is over 80 litres in size, I think it's for every 10 or 20 litres, they add another minute onto your compulsory pit stop.
Wow.
That's
to sort of even things out a bit, is it? Across the field.
Yeah, so we abandoned the idea of the 100 litre tank because of that. And also because it's hard enough to try and find an 80 litre tank that will fit in the car at a reasonable price.
And tell me, with this type of tank, is this the type of tank that has something in the tank to stop the fuel swooshing around?
Yeah, so a standard RX-7 comes with a 76 litre tank.
Yeah.
But it's got all these, like, it's all shaped strange and things like that. So instead we're looking at getting... Essentially, it's just a giant box
that's
filled with foam.
Yes.
We looked at proper, what they're called, fuel cells, where it has an external, like, aluminium body, and then has a, what they call a bladder. So it's like a, kind of like a, it's Kevlar-lined, how do you describe it? But it kind of looks like a bag that sits inside.
Is it hard or soft?
In between.
Yeah, it's like a goon bag.
Kind of, but a lot tougher.
Yeah.
And then filled with foam inside that.
Yeah.
To stop it from sloshing around.
I don't know where I saw it, probably like a Wheeler Dealers or something like that, but Anstead was putting in a nice fuel tank, I think it was him, or it could have been the other dude, Ed, but they put in this tank and they showed you know, how it all works. And it's, yeah, it's great. Like, it seems to make a lot of sense for a race car.
The reason you have them is that it's got the aluminium outer shell, which protects it from an impact.
Yep.
And if that's to break, in theory, hopefully the bag inside doesn't also break.
Right.
But the problem is, they're very expensive.
Sure.
So, still looking at options.
Yeah.
For that.
Yeah.
So.
So the short answer, the short is, it's not on the road. Short answer is
12 months on, nothing has happened to it.
Still a bit of work that needs to happen. A bit of money to be spent.
The extent of moving that's happened is it got put in a trailer and driven an hour to our engine builder's place.
Yep.
Where he does a lot of the specialised work. And then it hasn't moved from there since.
Is he okay with it sitting there for that long?
Yes. There's a car that beats it.
Okay.
In terms of sitting there by a substantial amount.
Not one of your cars, I hope.
No.
Yeah. So look, I assume all of these things, and we know another guy, Dale, with his Z car, and he's got another car that he
S13 drift car that he's converting back to a street car.
Yeah, but I mean, I think if you're more capable than I am, which you are, and your dad is, and Dale is, I think the risk that you run is that you, because you have the ability, you can buy these things, and then it turns into a years long project.
We knew going into it that it, I knew at least going into it that it was going to be like this.
Yeah.
Because the caliber of cars that I've started being around and seeing, I wanted to be at that level.
Yeah.
So.
I'm way too impatient for that. I would almost forego. Yeah, I do. I mean, at the end of the day, time is money, and money is money. And so you go, well, I can't afford that. I want to drive this car, so I can't afford a car that's going to cost me that much in either money or time.
So I understand that from the point of view of, like, I kind of can't afford what I'm doing.
But you've got time.
Exactly. The trade-off is I have the time that I can just...
Yeah, and you're not impatient like me.
I can do it myself as well. Yeah,
exactly.
So some of the areas where... you incur big costs is generally labour.
Yes.
Whereas I can do a lot of the basic stuff myself.
Yes. Yeah. I'm happy if I just install a fire extinguisher, which is the latest thing I did on the new car. And so I was taking someone for a drive on the weekend. She's like, why do you have a fire extinguisher? And I'm like, for the very reason that you would think I would have a fire extinguisher. Which I always find quite amusing, but I mean, I think it's just to give you a feeling of comfort. I'm not sure if you actually had an engine fire, whether or not it'd do anything.
Well, I'm planning on putting in mine a firebomb system.
Yeah.
So,
but that's good for tracking, right?
Yeah,
and that toggle can be pulled from inside and outside of the car.
Yeah, there's two of them. Yeah. And there's nozzles around that just spray it until it's empty.
Yeah.
But. Certainly, like, I've talked to people about the car, and they always ask, oh, when's it ready, what's the progress, and things like that. And I know a couple of people that, a guy I met at uni, he's rallying.
Yeah.
And he seems to be quite good at rallying. He was off at this thing called FIA Rally Stars for Asia Pacific, which is like they pick... people, young people that they like that are up and coming, and send them off to a thing, and then they do a shootout, and the person that wins gets a contract to drive a car in certain rallies. Anyway, he rallies an XL, which is costs nothing.
Yeah,
but he's from the point of view of he's trying to do it to get seat time, to get better, to climb up the ranks, things like that.
Yeah,
whereas. Over the course of my journey, I've had a lot less seat time because I've decided to go out and buy cars that I wanted to drive.
But you're also not trying to be a race car driver, are you?
Yes, but I've bought cars that I want to drive and track and race, not just...
for the experience of it.
Not just, I'm buying that car so I can race.
Yes.
It's like, I'm not just... I could have gone and bought an XL and done heaps of racing by this point.
Yeah.
And saved a whole bunch of money.
Yeah.
But then when people ask, I race an XL.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So I've spent that extra money to have a sacrifice driving it to have a nicer car.
Yeah.
Because now, from the point of view of me running, us running it ourselves, working on it ourselves, it helps the motivation when it's like you're going to work on that as well.
Yeah, exactly. Something that you want to have and to drive. So tell me, have you been to a Luft before?
No, because they're all American-based.
Yeah, but you've been to stuff overseas. You've been to a lot of stuff that always surprises me.
I've been
to plenty of racetracks. You've been to Nürburgring, etc. I actually thought you might have been to...
That was one big planned holiday, but I've never...
Been to any other big car shows overseas?
No. Okay. I've been to... When we were in America, we lined up that we're in Daytona for the test for the Daytona 24 Hours.
Yep.
They have this thing called the Raw. So it used to be about a month or a couple of weeks beforehand.
Yeah.
Now I think it's the week before.
Okay. I'm
not 100% sure. It depends on the year. But basically they roll out all the cars and practice.
Well, because I want to talk to you about Luft because it was quite an experience. Having said that, it's what I expected it to be. But I guess I had not high expectations, although they were, but kind of specific expectations of what it was going to be. And you and I have been to our fair share of events in Melbourne, like Highball, for example, which I really enjoy. And, you know, this was like, wasn't like Highball at all, but it was at another level. It was, it was really well worth it. Very enjoyable.
I guess the closest thing for me that I've probably been to it that's like it would be Goodwood.
Yeah.
Where it's... Because they had areas of display there.
Yeah.
But it's all hand-picked thing.
Like, yeah.
You get invited to display.
Yeah.
It's not just... Whereas Highball is like, there's cars that are invited, but then there's people that just roll up and it's like, oh, you got a cool car parked there.
Yeah. Should we pause and grab some dinner?
Yes, we'll pause and have our own intermission and go grab some dinner.
Excellent. Back soon.
So we're back from our intermission, assuming I don't edit this all out and just cut it together and no one knows that we had an intermission.
Yeah.
So we want to talk about a bit more in depth about Luft and the event itself.
Yeah, I mean, I only because I think it was a pretty unique event. We've probably in past podcasts talked about things like Highball in Melbourne, Luftwasser, which is predominantly a sort of an East Coast thing with Queensland and New South Wales and Victoria. It's usually on the New South Wales Victorian border, but Luftgekühlt in LA and wherever they choose to move around. I mean, it's really unique, I think, compared to other car shows. I guess car shows I've been to in the past where you go to like a convention center and it's just full of the big brands and their stalls, if you like. You know, a Highball, it's really just car parks jammed full of cars, which is amazing. And I personally think Highball in Melbourne is one of the best car gatherings that I've been to, but it's almost overwhelming with the amount of cars that they have there. What I expected Luft to be was exactly what it was, which is a highly curated event. I wouldn't even necessarily call it a curated car show. You know, it feels like it's got a fifth of the cars in numbers that, say, a Highball would have, but they're all spaced out and they're positioned in a very thoughtful way against either a backdrop or their environment, or so it's as much a it's like going to an art gallery for cars, I guess.
Yeah, because a lot of the people that run it and behind it are all photographers or have eyes for design and
So again, you probably know the details even better than I do, but the creative director, his background was very much in 20 years, I think, of basically doing filming all of the ads for Porsche. So he, you know, he now basically walks around the area they've decided to use for that particular year's Luft, and he positions the cars. And I think it's, you know, his experience and his eye which contributes greatly to the curatedness, if you like, of the Luft event. And then I think the guy who runs it logistically, Patrick Long, you know, he's a ex-Porsche driver. He's still very involved in a lot of Porsche things, I think, but obviously Luft is something that he's choosing to concentrate on greatly moving forward. So, and then I think also, I'm not sure where, but pretty sure that at least one of the founders of Deus Ex Machina, which, you know, in my mind is a very Australian thing, with a sort of very Mambo type of background, with Dare Jennings as one of the founders of both of those companies. I think they've also got a lot to do with Luftgekühlt as well. So it's everything. It's the design, it's the look, the feel, you know, the content, the people. I was surprised that normally you go to a car event and it's mostly male, men. You know, this one had a lot of women and a lot of families and even a few dogs. So it's a kind of, I just find it interesting. Like most of us, if we said to our wives, oh, would you like to come to a car show? You know, I'm not sure that many of them would really choose to do that. Whereas obviously these families and these couples that would go to Luft, you know, it's interesting enough for them. Yeah, I just thought it was a really great event. Very interesting cars, great curation. You know, there's all the other stuff like the sponsors that were there, Pirelli, Mobil 1, Leica, Classic Porsche. I'm sure there's some others that I've missed as well, but even their stalls were quite curated. They had some great giveaways, lots of great merch if you wanted to buy it as well there. So yeah, it's a great event. Highly recommend it. And I don't think it's necessarily even about, you know, being a Porsche nut. It's just about going to an event that is, you know what? It probably also really reflects that Californian car culture as well. So I think that's a lot to do with it. And maybe that's why the turnout they get there is what it is, because seemingly, as I've mentioned before, you know, couples are into their car. Well, maybe they both have a nice car, I'm not sure, but yeah, I think the car culture is just far more pervasive. So is there anything about it that you were interested in or had some comments about?
For me, it's always been, they've almost as careful, if not more picky, about the location and the environment than the cars themselves.
True, I would say so, yeah.
For them, that's the more difficult part.
Yeah, it's a good point. Because
they know enough people and the event's big enough that the cars will come.
Yes.
But it's about finding the correct environment to showcase it and get the message across that they're trying to get across.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The one that, I mean, they've had this venue twice now, the Port of Los Angeles. I think it was one of the original ones, and they've just had it again. But one that really I quite liked the look of was this one that they had in Universal Studios somewhere. That looked really appropriate because they could, you know, really spread it out. And I like that idea of essentially walking through a fake town, being Universal backlot or whatever it was, and, you know, just coming across the next Porsche and having the space and the time to look around at that Porsche in that environment that they've chosen and how they've chosen to show it off. I think they had one in a timber yard as well once. That looked pretty cool. So it's always sort of industrial. And yeah, so look, my day started with waking up hearing Porsches driving down the road, obviously on their way for an early bump in or something like that. Dan, my mate, was still asleep, having flown in from New York the night before. And I just got up, had a shower, and went and stood out the front of my hotel and essentially watched 100 or so Porsches drive by. All of them very interesting, either in a stock way or in a customized way. And by about 7:30, I think we sort of decided to walk down there. It was only a K away from where we were staying. The early bird 8 a.m. entrance was, the queue was already forming for that. And I'd say we were in that queue for about half an hour to 45 minutes. So by the time we got in, it was probably 8:30. Walk straight in and there's the Ice Cream Metallic Singer Turbo Study that that came out originally that essentially is almost the same color as my ice cream metallic, which just looks fantastic. But I was blown away seeing that particular singer in... I'd seen a singer or two in person before, but seeing that particular one, it was just so finished and polished and sort of a modern version of the G series, which now, you know, is what, 89 or something might have been the last G series. So that's a good 30 plus year old car. But to see a modern version of it just looked fantastic in the setting, like it was up on its own wooden plinth. It had palm trees around it, had a fantastic background of colours and stuff that really set it off. You know, people standing around it taking photos. It was beautiful. And then you go into the first sort of big shed, and there was probably only about 10 cars in this big shed, but the way that they were spaced out and that they were presented was fantastic. The colours they choose, some sponsors were in there. It was fantastic. Then we walked sort of outside to some other areas. There was a whole area of 914s, for example. There was another shed. Yeah, look, really just the curation of it was amazing. And probably the only regret I have was by the time lunchtime came around, I thought, you know, we'd been around probably twice and I was with Daniel and I was conscious that not being even a car guy, you know, I didn't want to really bore his pants off, so we kind of left around lunchtime. But I forgot that if I was on my own, I probably would have gone and could have spent 2 hours just in the car park of the event, because the amount of people who drove there in their Porsches to come and watch, to look at the event was massive as well. So kind of missed out on that. And I'm sure there were just as many cars in the car park that were just as good, if not better, than in the actual show. But as you said, it's not about the cars, actually. It's about the curation
of it. Well, I know it when I go to Highball here in Melbourne, I end up coming in a bit late, so I'm always in one of the far back parking lots.
Yeah.
I spend just as much time walking through the parking lot and checking out cars and taking photos of cars as I do in the actual area where they're on display.
Exactly. So anyway, look, I'll wrap it up by essentially saying I would absolutely recommend going. It's not super cheap. I can't remember exactly what the prices are. It could even be $100 USD for a ticket, but they sell out and I think it's worth it. It's certainly a bucket list type of situation. You know, you've got your Porsche Museum, a Luftgekühlt. There's a few more I want to do. Rennsport, I think, is one that's Porsche specific.
Rennsport Reunion.
And it's always in California as well, I think.
Yeah, it's in Monterey, so that's it. Northern California.
Yeah.
Did they have any like activations and things like that around the place?
Like what sort of thing?
I know Spike's Car Radio, they did like a live recording there.
They did. So again, that was in the afternoon, and I'd probably seen that in an Instagram post in the lead up to it and completely forgot about it on the day. But no, really. I mean, most of it was more sort of walking around. If anything, the sponsors areas were pretty good. Like they weren't a huge tent or anything, but it was well presented and there was always a giveaway. Like, for example, I got a fuel bib for one of my cars, which had a Pegasus horse stamped on it from the mobile stall, and that was free. So you just got to leave your name and your email address, so you end up on some mailing list, which is fine. Got a really nice little poster from Pirelli, a nice Type 7 sticker from those guys. Just enough, but not too much. The merch stall, you know, was very, very busy, got busier during the day, but a good selection of caps and t-shirts. It's kind of stuff that I think you want from that event, because, you know, being like me, you wear lots of t-shirts when you're driving as well. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, look, I don't think making money is a big problem for them. I'm assuming that they, between their sponsors and the ticket sales, that they cover the costs, if not make profit. So, which is what you want. You want any business to be successful and to make money. So, but I didn't feel like it was ridiculously expensive. I thought it was, as I said, exactly what I expected it to be, which was great. It was good. Yeah. So, I don't know if I'll go to another Luft again or when it will be, because I would like to do some of those other events as well. Some of the Porsche guys are talking about Rennsport Reunion. And then, as we've talked about, like, I'd love to go and, well, Goodwood would be another major one. And as I understand, there's two. There's like a Revival
There's the Revival, which is at the Goodwood Race Circuit,
mm-hmm.
which it's historic dress generally, and they have all the historic cars racing around.
Yep.
And then there's the Festival of Speed, which is on...
Which is sort of like a hill climb, really,
isn't
it? It's
a hill climb. I can't remember what his title is.
Oh, now, it's his estate. Right.
It's his driveway.
Right.
And you go past his big house, and there's manufacturers are showing off their new cars. Yes. And they'll have a theme. What was it this year?
I think it's Revival that I would like to go to.
Because I went to the Festival of Speed, and it was good. And I went there. I was lucky enough to be there for the 70th anniversary of Porsche.
Perfect.
So it was just Porsches everywhere. And that's what got me drinking the Kool-Aid of Porsches, essentially. Because when you're having them ran down your throat so much, it's hard not to find one that you like at least.
But as a reminder, your dad's been into Porsches in the past as well, and you guys are both Porsche Victoria members anyway, aren't you?
He's had one in the past, yes, and he likes them. But first and foremost, it's certainly Mazdas and Rotaries.
Yes. Mind you, I mean, if you're still current members of Porsche Club Victoria, that's pretty keen.
Yeah, it's a good club. It helps with the licenses, because you need to be a member to have the license.
Right. Yeah, so look, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a huge, huge tour, you know, going to those three things, which was the Porsche Museum, the Berlin, whatever it was called again, and then Luft 8 was fantastic. So it was really, and you know, not to mention that at any point anywhere I can like pull out my phone and take a quick snap of something, you know, that takes my eye.
Yep.
And that's what Insta's good for, actually. I use Insta as much to kind of cruise back through my own profile and look at the cars as anything as well. So yeah, it's good. So what do we need to wrap up on?
All right. Do you want to wrap up and do Instagram recommendations?
You'd have to go first.
Yeah. So I can't remember exactly how I found this.
Yeah.
I think they might have followed me possibly a little while ago, but the tag is at Keeping Time on a Dime, and the whole page is all about typically vintage or older secondhand watches.
Yep.
That are all not all that expensive, which is something I like, and I try to promote as much as possible, especially to friends and people that are uneducated about watches and only know about Rolex and things like that. And it's yeah. Like, no, you can go to an op shop and find, if you're lucky, a nice old Seiko, which I have done before. So yeah, it's a nice, simple page with some pretty simple but nice photography.
Yep.
With interesting backgrounds and a bit of story. Some of the posts have a bit of a story to them and things like that. And yeah, just a very nice page.
So I've got a recommendation here, but it's funnily, it's... I'm going to try and find the right one, but maybe I haven't got the right one. All right, so I'll quickly change. So because it's not watch-related, but it's Porsche-related. And not only is it Porsche-related, he's got... So his handle is Benny Musso, BENNYMUSU, Benny Musso. And he's got... He's one half of another car-related YouTube channel called The Motorists. It's a really interesting concept. You know, they're into lots of different cars, but Porsche is a big part of it as well. And I think, in fact, Benny works at Porsche Centre Melbourne as well. But I'd have a look at Benny's handle on Insta. But I'd say go a step further and go and have a look at some of The Motorists' YouTube content. It's really nicely put together. You know, it's sitting down in armchairs, talking about cars, driving the cars, you know, different perspectives on the car. There's a very specific 1974 Porsche Carrera Targa in there, which is not that far away from my 1974 coupe in many ways, with a 2.7 litre engine, which is sort of shared by, you know, one of the most legendary Porsches, being the Carrera 2.7 RS. So anyway, check those out. He certainly, I don't assume he needs the followers, but his posts are varied, and The Motorist is an interesting show to go and check out as well.
Yeah, both of our suggestions far outrank us and followers.
Right, exactly. Well, that's not... Yeah, exactly. That's not...
It's not difficult.
And the only people who've been following me lately are quite random people, and I'm sort of looking at it going, what's going on here? So we no need to get into that.
Oh, well, it's been a while.
Yeah.
Oh, well, so Fifth Wrist is a website by the community for the community. Follow us on Instagram at Fifth Wrist on Instagram. Find all of us on Instagram. Our handles will be in the show notes. We've got a Slack community, which is good fun and where events are organized and banter's had over new watch releases and new watch purchases. Just send a message to either the Fifth Wrist account or one of the hosts, and they'll get you organized to be added into the Slack group. And otherwise, stay on time.
Fifth Wrist is by the community for the community. We would love you to join the crew via our group chat on Slack. Email us at contact@fifthwrist.com and join the movement.